This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. On Friday evening, the United States, along with Britain and France, launched airstrikes against three Syrian targets believed to be related to Syria's chemical weapons program. But in Damascus, Syrian propaganda was in full force over the weekend, with pro-Assad demonstrators taking to the streets to support the government and Syrian President Bashar al-Assad telling reporters he was in a good mood as he met with Russian officials. Nikki Haley, the American ambassador to the United Nations, delivered a warning at the UN Security Council on Saturday.
I spoke to the president this morning, and he said if the Syrian regime uses this poisonous gas again, the United States is locked and loaded.
Then on Sunday, Haley appeared on CBS Face the Nation and said the U.S. will also impose new sanctions against Russia for enabling Syria's use of chemical weapons. Ben Hubbard is in Beirut, where he's Middle East correspondent for The New York Times.
We know that these three militaries fired, you know, this was a very coordinated strike. We think it was just over 100 missiles that struck primarily three sites in Syria, all which the U.S. government has said were associated with Syria's chemical weapons programs. These were in and outside of the capital, Damascus, and also near the central city of Homs. These sites appear to have been completely destroyed. But, you know, sort of as we've got a little bit further away, it's been quite curious that there was no reports of anybody killed. And there was really no, we've not heard of any reported release of any toxic gases or chemicals or anything like that after the strike. And so it's really raised some questions about, okay, we destroyed these three facilities, but this was after, you know, numerous days of President Trump threatening to strike, which would have given the Syrians and their Russian and Iranian allies plenty of warning to get any sensitive materials or equipment out of the way, and also to get their personnel out of there. So this was very much to send a message more than it was to do any real damage or to and definitely the goal was not to, you know, change the dynamics of the wider Syrian wall. Their goal here was very much to send a message that was entirely about the issue of chemical weapons. You're not supposed to use these things. But I think that the secondary message or the implicit message in that is, you know, to the government of Bashar al-Assad, we are not going to remove you from power. And we may complain about the other ways that you're killing people, but we're not necessarily going to do anything about it.
So, Ben, the explicit and the implicit message here, you mentioned it. The president says the world has to be sent a message that chemical weapons won't be tolerated. But a lot of reporting suggests that Assad used chemical weapons as many as 50 times before the strike that precipitated this latest round of airstrikes. What red line was really crossed here if there's reason to believe he's been using chemical weapons all along?
You're exactly right. There have been dozens of reports of use of chemical weapons since the 2013 incident. I mean, the largest of which would have been last year in the village of Khan Sheikhoun, which was the last time that Trump basically said, we need to lay down this red line, and this was the last time that the United States ordered military strikes on Syria. In the meantime, both before and after that attack, we've had lots of these smaller scale, somewhat murkier attacks where a lot of them don't kill anybody. Some of them only kill a few people. They tend to not get very much media coverage because, you know, unfortunately, there's already so much death and destruction going on in Syria that an attack in one place that maybe only kills a few people is not really something that we pay a lot of attention to. But we have had this steady drumbeat of attacks. A lot of them appear to be with chlorine, which is not in and of itself a banned substance because of its importance for water purification and various other things. But we have every reason to believe that the Syrian government has found ways to use things like chlorine and perhaps other chemical substances kind of just to inspire terror in these communities that it's trying to take back from the rebels. So most of these are not incredibly well investigated because they don't kill a lot of people. And it almost, you know, some of the evidence that we have from the attack last weekend was that it was primarily chlorine that was used, and that one of the reasons it ended up becoming so deadly was really just kind of a terrible, terrible circumstances, that whatever the government had dropped had landed on one building that happened to have a lot of people crowded into it because they were trying to avoid the shelling and airstrikes that were going on at the time. And that meant that the punch from these chemicals was that much stronger because these people were in an enclosed area. So, you know, there's one theory that says, well, if this particular load had come down a few meters away and landed in the street where the gas could have dispersed fairly easily or where the wind could have blown it away, then we would have seen a much, much smaller death toll, which would have meant we would have not had these terrible photos of all of these, you know, men, women and children sort of lying lifeless with the foam on their mouths and nostrils. And that may have meant that Trump would have not decided to do any kind of military intervention.
Right. So, Ben, everything you're suggesting says that, yes, this was meant to send a message, but that it does nothing to change the overall trajectory of the war, that Assad and the Russians basically have calculated effectively here that strikes, retaliatory strikes, are just a cost of doing business, and they will remain in power.
Yes, and I think that was very much the idea. I don't think that anybody in the American government or in the British or French governments was thinking that this was going to do any more than that. And I think, you know, again, it was calibrated to keep that from happening. So I think Syria, you know, the day after the strike or the 2 days after the strike, I think very much woke up to, in a way, the miserable status quo that it had before this entire incident happened. You know, we still have, you know, basically an international struggle for influence inside of Syria under the cover of a civil war that's, you know, sort of got the people of Syria stuck in the middle. International diplomacy after 7 years has not really found any way to bring this to an end or even very effective ways to bring down the violence on local levels. So, you know, there was a big show of force, there was a big message sent, but at the end of the day, we're really back where we started with this terrible, terrible war that nobody really knows how to stop.
Ben Hubbard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Ben Hubbard is Middle East correspondent for the New York Times, based in Beirut.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.